welcome back to Be Boomer Unleashed. I'm Jerry Lake, the Unleashed Baby Boomer, and I'm your host for this episode and all of the episodes of Be Boomer Unleashed. Today we launch episode 22, The Evolution of the Church and Christian Values, talking about television evangelism, or televangelism, if you will, the good, the bad, and the ugly, part two. Last week we had part one, and we talked about some of those televangelists, and as we said last week, we're going to try to hold editorial comment to a minimum and let you decide what the good, the bad, and the ugly is, because there's some good in televangelism, there's some bad, and there's some downright ugly, and we're going to allow you to make that choice rather than us to make that choice for you. Now remember, you can always find our podcast on beboomerunleashed.podbean.com. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, Tumblr, Instagram, and Google Play at beboomerunleashed. You can find us on Twitter at beboomerunleashed1, and you can always send us an email, and we encourage you to send us those emails to beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Love to have your comments and questions, ideas for future episodes. We love hearing from you at beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Share us with your friends if you don't mind. If you like us. If you don't like us, then just kind of keep quiet about it so nobody will know how bad we are. Okay, so as we proceed with part two, remember we talked about as a little background in nearly every episode that our conversation about the evolution of the church is in two distinct paths. One is church organization, which includes everything from buildings and grounds and where we build the churches to our methods of ministry, and certainly televangelism is one of those methods of ministry that is used today. After we finish this discussion on the church organization, as we wrap up this televangelism today, we will start talking about church teachings, which include the core values and looking at Christianity in practice. And are the core values of the church today in line with what they were back in the 1950s or even in Jesus' day? Or are they in line with Jesus' teachings, more importantly, not in line with what the church teaches, but are our core values today in line with what Jesus teaches? And I think a lot of times folks, churches have said, well, you got to change with the times, you got to change with the times. Well, you know, God never changes. His opinion never changes. But we're going to talk about those core values, those church teachings, and where we've come since the 1950s. Well, we started our discussion several weeks ago about going to church in the 50s. Remember, that church was led by the greatest generation. We were community churches, and we were a vital part of the community. Then enter the sexual revolution of the 60s, when the baby boomers came of age and the sexual revolution invaded the local church. Then in the 1970s, we spent several episodes talking about the megachurch, where the boomers had a better idea, and we thought the megachurch or this bigger church and getting away from the community church was a better way of doing things, and how we imposed that idea on people around us, and how that has changed the face of the local church over the years. Then last week, we started this discussion on televangelism, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it, and we mentioned several televangelists currently day and televangelists of the past. But as we said, we're going to let you guys decide what the good, the bad, and the ugly is of it. We're not going to make those editorial comments to try to sway your opinion, although sometimes my editorial comments just kind of come through, don't they? I'm sorry. I apologize. That's just the way it is. But we talked about a few guys last week. One was David Jeremiah, Shadow Mountain Community Church in El Cajon, California, and the Turning Point Ministry. So we talked about Charlie Stanley, the First Baptist Church of Atlanta, founder and president of In Touch Ministries. Then we talked about Billy Graham. Man, what a career he had, proclaiming the gospel back from 1918 when he was born till he died in 2018. And of course, he didn't start preaching when he was a baby, but that's when he was born. But he had a long, long ministry, and the Billy Graham Crusades, which were live events that were also televised. Then we talked about Pat Robertson and the 700 Club, and how he, you know, made an unsuccessful bid for president, and his television show there was probably partially responsible for the founding of the Christian Coalition, a group for conservative values. But Pat, probably the first guy that we talked about in that list, begs for money a lot. He would get on there and beg, you know, send so much. We want you to be a member of the 700 Club, and you can do that by sending so much money. So, hey, you know, that's one of those guys that kind of begged for money. Pat, I think he's a nice guy, and he's certainly a conservative, no doubt about it. He has some comments and ideas that cannot be backed up or supported with scripture, but, you know, that's Pat, and that's what he does. Don't think he's a bad guy, but likes to beg for money a lot. Then we had Benny Hinn, who was a charismatic, emphasis on spiritual gifts and the prosperity gospel, not on so much soul winning and evangelism. And we kind of identified that charismatic church, what it meant. Is that bad? No. But emphasis should be on Jesus and not on spiritual gifts. It should be on Jesus and what he can do for us and not what we can do for you. Then we come to another guy that has risen to popularity, Joel Osteen. And Joel Osteen, we've made mention of before, Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas, preaches the prosperity gospel. He is definitely a prosperity gospel preacher. You don't hear much about anything other than the prosperity gospel, but he focuses on God's goodness rather than on an obedient life and on sin. Joel just wants everybody to feel good about themselves. Oh, you know, God is good and God is love, and, you know, you give to get, and God will give you your desires of your heart, and you'll have all this money and these fancy cars and all this. And he smiles a lot and bats his eyes a lot, and he doesn't talk about sin. He doesn't talk about God's wrath, and that's part of the gospel. You can't just have part of it, and, you know, you can't just preach about God's wrath all the time. You know, God is going to get you for that. You can't preach that kind of gospel either, but you've got to have a balance between the love of God and between God's wrath and sin and how God expects us to live in this present world, and you just don't hear that from Joel Osteen. You just don't hear from him. I'm sorry, he smiles a lot and he bats his eyes and he's a friendly guy. And, you know, he and his wife are just the perfect couple. And there's not really a whole lot of scandal in Joel Osteen as far as sexual impropriety or anything like that. We, you know, there's no documentation of anything like that. But he is, you know, he is just a prosperity gospel guy. You decide. He has a net worth, and we've been talking about the net worth of these guys, net worth of $40 million. $40 million, Joel Osteen, $40 million, and he lives with his family in their modest $10.5 million home. So no wonder he smiles a lot. But Joel Osteen is one of those guys that preached the prosperity gospel, and it's a feel-good gospel, and it's what a lot of people are looking for today because they don't like to have the sin in their life illuminated. They don't like that. Who wants to have their faults pointed out? We don't like that, do we? We want people to tell us how good we are and how good it's going to be. For so Joel Osteen. Creflo Dollar. Boy, his name fits what he does. Creflo Dollar. President of Creflo Dollar Ministries, has a net worth of $27 million, and he's another one of these guys that preaches prosperity lifestyle. You know, you give to get. All this money you're given Creflo and his ministries helps him to own two Rolls Royces, not one, but two Rolls Royces, a private jet, and three, count them three, one, two, three, multi-million dollar homes. So here's Creflo Dollar, who tells you to send your money to him and you're going to live the prosperity lifestyle, and you're back here in a three-bedroom rancher that you paid $115,000 for, and Creflo Dollar has two Rolls Royces, a private jet, and three multi-million dollar homes. So yeah, prosperity gospel. It works for guys like Creflo Dollar. It works. So that's all I'm saying about that. Then we got Joyce Meyer, has a net worth of $8 million. But remember this, these personal net worth figures, that doesn't count the ministry. These are just personal net worth numbers. But Joyce Meyer is another charismatic who preaches the prosperity gospel. You give to me and you're going to get something. She has, now listen to what the prosperity gospel has done for Joyce Meyer. She has a $10 million jet. How about that? A $10 million jet. Do you have a $10 million jet? Those of you who have sent money to Joyce Meyer or Creflo Dollar or Joel Osteen, do you have a $10 million jet or a $10.5 million home or a net worth of $40 million or $27 million or even $8 million? And she also owns several homes that cost up to $2 million each. So she owns several homes. Oh, and she just drives, you know, she doesn't drive a Rolls Royce. So we give Joyce kudos for not driving a Rolls Royce. She drives a $107,000 Mercedes. $107,000 Mercedes. I imagine she must feel like trash pulling in the parking lot with the likes of Joel Osteen and Creflo Dollar. She probably has to park away from there somewhere so her car won't look so junky. That poor little old woman who has a $107,000 Mercedes. They also have a $20 million office. Get this. They have a $20 million office. Does your pastor have a $20 million office? Do you have a $20 million office? Well, that's not all. It's outfitted with $5.7 million worth of furniture. And then a requirement for every successful minister. God wants you to have, as she does in her office, a $23,000 antique marble-topped commode. $23,000 antique marble-topped commode. Okay. Good job, Joyce. Prosperity gospel works for Joyce. Then we've got Kenneth Copeland. Oh, my, we've got Kenneth Copeland. He was born back in 1936. He was a charismatic movement, also preacher. He preaches a prosperity gospel. Wonder how that works for old Kenneth. Prosperity gospel works for Kenneth Copeland. Well, he has multiple aircraft, including two jets, several airplanes. He's been investigated for using the Kenneth Copeland Ministries jets for personal use. So, My, he's not just using it for business, he's using it for personal. So Kenneth Copeland, that prosperity gospel is working for him. Oh, by the way, Kenneth Copeland's net worth, we got to have a drum roll for this. Kenneth Copeland is the wealthiest minister in the world, I guess, because he has a net worth, personal net worth. Now, sit down if you're not sitting down. $760 million. $760 million. Have you ever sent money to Kenneth Copeland Ministries thinking it was going to go to feed the sick, or feed the poor, send medicine to the sick, or help some kids in an orphanage somewhere? Have you sent money to Kenneth Copeland Ministries? Well, if you did, you help him support his two jets, multiple aircraft, his lavish home, and you help him build his net worth of $760 million. Well, Jimmy Swaggart, poor old Jimmy Swaggart. Remember Jimmy Swaggart? He was an Assemblies of God charismatic evangelist. He was Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin. Kenneth and Jerry Lee Lewis used to run around together. They were cousins. Kenneth Copeland's a big singer, big piano player, a lot like his cousin Jerry Lee. Poor old Kenneth, his downfall, though, was sex scandals back in the 1980s. He got caught with some prostitutes. I'm sure he was ministering to them. I'm sure that he was evangelizing these prostitutes, and he was just misunderstood. But he got on the air, his famous I'm sorry speech, where he apologized. He had let everybody down, and he disappointed God and Jimmy Swaggart. I think the Assemblies of God back in the 80s decided to defrock him, pull his preaching license. So Jimmy Swaggart, sex scandals, big problem. Lost his license to preach for the Assemblies of God, and poor fellow only has a net worth reported of about $1.5 million. So Jimmy Swaggart on hard times, poor fellow. But anyway, then we have a couple of famous ones that we've all heard of, Jim Baker and Tammy Faye. Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, the PTL Club. Remember the PTL Club? It was like Late Night with David Letterman, only from a Christian stance. And he and Tammy were together, and they would sing, and they had all different kinds of guests on, and they did a lot of fundraising. Send your money to PTL. I think the PTL officially stands for Praise the Lord Club, but a lot of our friends referred to it as Pass the Loot Club because they were always begging for money, always had some kind of telethon going, begging for money. And between 1984 and 87, they were reported by the Charlotte Observer to have some illegitimate fundraising activities, leading to criminal charges against Baker. And Baker and his PTL associates You remember when he sold the timeshares, $1,000 lifetime memberships, entitling buyers to an annual three-night stay at a luxury hotel in Heritage, USA? Wow, he should have, you know, that's the timeshare business for you. And according to the prosecution at Baker's fraud trial, tens of thousands of memberships were sold, but only one 500-room hotel was ever finished. So, my goodness, you got 500 rooms and tens of thousands of memberships. I hope you're not too impatient to get your three-day vacation. So, where did all that money go? Where'd it go? He sold exclusive partnerships with exceeded capacity, raising more than twice the money. He raised more than twice the money needed to build the hotel. And much of the money paid for Heritage USA's operating expenses, you know, that Christian amusement park or theme park, if you will. And Baker kept $3.4 million for his own trouble. Well, there was a big grand jury probe, and Baker was indicted back in 1988 on, I think it was 8 counts of mail fraud and 15 counts of wire fraud, something like that, and 1 count of conspiracy to commit fraud. And the jury found him guilty on all those counts. And he sentenced Baker, the judge, I think he is Judge Robert Daniel Potter, sentenced Baker to 45 years in federal prison and imposed a $500,000 fine on him. Well, poor old Jim, he went to jail, and Tammy Faye divorced him. And, you know, they later, I guess Baker was a model prisoner, and they were able to get a new sentencing hearing in 1991. And he said that at that time, Baker's sentence was commuted. It was reduced to 8 years. In 93, he was transferred to a minimum security federal prison, where he served out the rest of that term. And he was paroled in July of 1994 after serving almost 5 years of his sentence. So he didn't go for 45 years. He went for 5 of that. And his son, Jay, spearheaded a letter-writing campaign to the parole board. Remember Alan Dershowitz, the celebrity lawyer? He was the parole attorney. And Baker was released prison's custody on December 1st, 1994. Hey, he still owes $6 million to the IRS. What would happen to you or me if we owed $6 million to the IRS? You know, that's quite a bit of money. But hey, he's on the air again. Did you know that he's on the air again? Jim Baker is back and alive and well on the air again. So the electronic church or the television church, and we're not going to, I don't think there's any need to talk about any more of these televangelists, but what it's done to the local church, a lot of people think that they're a member of these big mega TV churches, and they send their tithes into these churches, and they think that, well, I can sit there on Sunday morning and watch this service. Now, that's all well and good for sick and shut in, that kind of thing. As a matter of fact, a lot of local churches stream their broadcast, stream their sermons live on Facebook and other media, and I think that's great, because if you're out of town on vacation, or if you're homesick with pneumonia, or you've got a broken arm or a neck or something, you're laid up in the hospital, then you don't have to miss church. But God said, Jesus said, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. The electronic church was never, ever meant to replace the local church. At least it shouldn't have. It should be a supplement to the local church. But so many people say, well, I'll just sit home and listen to Charles Stanley, or I'll sit home and listen to David Jeremiah, or I'll sit home and listen to, the 700 Club, or I'll sit home and listen to Creflo Dollar, or whatever it might be, and I'll just send my tithe money to them, and I won't have to go to church, don't have to be involved, don't even have to get dressed up. I can sit here in my pajamas with my house slippers on, and I can watch have church right here in my own home, and that's just as good as it is going to church. Well, no, it's not. No, it's not. And that kind of thinking has had a profound effect on the local church. Local church attendance is probably at an all-time low. And people don't find the need to go to church. They find the need to play Little League baseball with their kids. They find the need to go camping. They find the need to go to the lake and water ski. They find the need to play golf. They find the need to do all these things. But because they can watch one of these TV preachers and send a little love offering to those TV preachers, then they think that they have fulfilled their obligation to God and they have time to do all these other things and they don't go to the local church. So we've got local churches out there today that don't have enough money to pay their light bill, but you've got all these televangelists with millions and millions of dollars of net worth and Rolls Royces and jets and $10 million homes and all this, and you're telling me that's a good thing? You're telling me that's a good thing? Now, televangelism has a part and that in the total ministry of Christianity. They have a part in that, but it should be a supplement to. It should be something you would listen to when you're sick or shut in or out of town. It shouldn't be a replacement for the local church, and that's what's happening all too often. And, I just don't think that's what God intended when he said, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. I don't think he meant assembling on the easy chair in front of the TV. I think he meant assembling with believers in a local area, whether it, back in the early church, they met in homes. They didn't have really church buildings to meet in, but now we have church buildings. And, if you have a church in your community, rather than sit home and watch some TV preacher, get your clothes on and go to church. We encourage you to do that and become active in your local church and support your local church. That's just like local businesses are folding up all the time because people are doing all their shopping online. I used to own a UPS store. And, people would come in and ship a package, and I would make, about 30%. They could ship it there, and I'd make about 30 to 35% on a package that they shipped. But then UPS made it easy for them to go online and print a label. And they brought it in and just dropped it across the counter, and I made 91 cents on that. Well, it takes a whole lot of 91-cent packages. And as a matter of fact, the price was the same. You come to my store, it was the same price as it was if you printed the label online. But everybody saw it's so much more convenient. And I said, well, I hope you find it's really convenient when I go out of business. Oh, you're not going out of business. I said, yeah, I can't stay in business at 91 cents a shot. And sure enough, we closed up the UPS store back in 2014 because it just wasn't profitable and it just didn't make sense anymore. And that's kind of where we are on the local church. We've got a lot of local churches folding up, closing their doors because they can't afford to pay the light bill. They can't afford to pay the heating bill. They can't afford a pastor because people are sending their money to these big dollar preachers in these big dollar mega church televangelistic conglomerates instead of supporting the local church. And then you've got guys like Kenneth Copeland, with a net worth of $760 million. Just think of it, folks. Just think of it. Well, that's about it for the televised church. I think we've beat that horse enough and how it's affected the local church. And we hope that you've gotten something out of that. But like I said, don't just take my word for it. Go out there and do your own research. And see what you think and what your opinions are. If you have an opinion, if you find something, or if you disagree with something I've said, drop us an email. We'd be happy to respond to you. Well, next week, remember, we will start our discussion on the core values of the local church and Christian values and Christian teachings and Christianity in practice and how it's changed from 1950 to today. And believe me, it's changed. Well, listen, it's been great having you here this week. Share us with your friends if you like us. Pass us along on Facebook or other social media. If you don't like us and you think this is the goofiest thing you've ever heard, just, don't tell everybody how goofy we are. Just keep it to yourself, okay? Well, listen, that's it for today. We'll see you next week. Have a great week in the meantime, and may God bless each and every one of you. Goodbye.